So it is you, the sun, is it not?
But this time, it will be different. Russian.
You're good.
I get better. Right in your potholes. My name is Dirk, and I will be your sensei for this full contact podcast. Let me introduce you to my karate squad mates. I just saw them lying down outside doing some pelvic thrusts, and when I questioned them about it, they said it was for a training montage. It is Marcy Dale.
Hello. Hi. Sorry. I heard a little voice yelling and it's my daughter, so
it's your
sorry.
Conscience telling
it's my
you
conscience
to telling get in the game.
Yeah. But hello, hi. Yes, pelvic thrust, you know me. So
great.
Great. Yeah, good. Awesome. right back at you. How are you, Dirk?
I'm fantastic. Thanks. I could also hear a small person screaming in the background and wondered if you were about to get up and walk off. And the fact that you're still sat
she's
here.
She's happy. Okay. I know the difference. That's a happy yo.
She's going to burst in a minute. Just
she's going to knock on the door any second. Now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. With jam smeared all over her face. That's jelly, I think you call it over there, actually, isn't it? Jelly.
We have jam and jelly.
What is the flipping difference?
Beats me.
Well, anyway, we'll move on away from the jam chat. Stay tuned for that next episode. They have promised to never use their good looks in aggression, only self-defense. It is Mikey P. Hello, Mikey P.
Hey, Dirk. Hey, where have you been? Where have you been, Dirk?
Out and about.
Aw, man. Save it for the National Enquirer, okay? I didn't ask for your life story. That's how banter between two best friends is like. That's what I learned.
The realest banter you'll ever hear. Hey, you moving in? Oh, no, we're just here for the weekend. We travel light. Those guys, if you don't know what we're talking about, you probably haven't watched this episode's movie, which...
Of course they've watched. Everybody's watched this movie. Everybody's heard of this movie.
Well, listen, if you haven't watched it, it's on flipping YouTube. Go and watch it and then come back. You know, you'll have a great time. The movie we're going to talk about later on is called No Retreat, No Surrender. And it came out in like 86. Yeah, 1986. And it's my pick for something called the Rediscovered Mix that we're doing. Mikey, would you explain what this Rediscovery Mix is?
Rediscovered, exactly what it sounds like, is something that was a treasure of ours in our past. Maybe we haven't watched in a while. Let's go back and watch it and see if we rediscover our love for these former gems of ours.
Let's see if we can challenge ourselves to watch a movie from our past and see if we rise to that challenge.
Nobody can see you wink, buddy. Nobody can see you wink.
They can just feel it in their cores.
How are you two? You doing all right?
Yeah. I guess, was the challenge like a hint for me?
Was it a hint? Was it a hint?
So I guess I'll go first. I volunteer as tribute. So this wasn't this weekend, it was last weekend, but I saw Challengers, the tennis movie. Very spicy movie.
Just the trailer is spicy.
I freaking love the movie. I am so happy I saw it in a theater because it's very loud. Sound design's great. The score is incredible. I felt so alive by the end of the movie.
Wow.
I really loved it. I was sitting there, I think, smiling the whole time.
Wow.
So I hope I get to see it again. It was in IMAX, too, in a couple of different theaters around here. So I'd like to, I don't know. It sucks because every week there's something new and I've like, then that's the IMAX movie for like the week. And, but I would love to go see Challengers again. Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross did the score. And hey, those guys, they know what they're doing, believe it or not. So
I heard they're pretty famous.
Yeah, they're pretty famous. So
what did you like about it, Marcy?
Their performances, I think. I know the three actors pretty well, but I think they're all doing something I've never seen them do before. I really love Josh O'Connor, famous for being young Prince Charles on The Crown, and now he's in a bunch of movies. And I just found out today he's my age. I didn't know that. I thought he was a little bit younger than me.
22.
And then Mike Feist, who I've seen, he was in the new West Side Story a couple years ago. I really like him a lot. And then Zendaya is the main character. And basically, it's just like two guys in love with her for like decades of time. And then just some spiciness throughout the whole movie. I loved it. I loved it. It was very just fun and just, I don't know. It was just, I don't know. Just fun. A good time. Mm-hmm.
Mikey, I feel like what's happening here is Marcy has regressed to an earlier version of herself in these podcasts when she was very obsessed with seeing hot people making out. That was like, if a couple of hot people made out in a movie, she was automatically all in, putting a seatbelt on, sitting down for the ride.
I mean, I still, like, Mikey, you joined, and then I kind of was like, I don't want to scare Mikey away, so I kind of stopped bringing that up, but I think it's time I can start talking about that.
I think live your truth, Marcy. Yeah. You know, if you like aesthetically pleasing people smooching, go for it, kid. I'm pretty sure we can find many films with that in.
I don't think it's a spoiler to say there's a bunch of that in Challengers. Oh man, they're just it's nice to see. You know what's really cool about it? It's kind of like Dune Part 2, where this is just the next generation of actors, and you're like, we're in good hands. Like, they're really all good at their jobs and we're going to be fine. And the movie star is still like alive and well. So that, I think that's like the really promising thing of it.
Wow.
I'm actually shocked about some of the reviews I've seen in, especially because also that you called it fun, because it seems like such a serious drama movie. I get from it is like a Wild Things vibe from like the 90s, where it was like, super charged up sexually, and then there's like a serious like crime going on or something throughout the episode.
This might like make Dirk not that interested, but it reminds me a little bit of Succession, where it's just like, these are terrible, terrible people, but this is so entertaining to watch these terrible people.
Everything reminds you of Succession, Marcy.
I feel like the trailer gives away a lot. Am I right in that?
No? I don't think so. I was surprised with a couple of different things. I thought the movie, this isn't really a spoiler. It starts and it's present day, and then it goes back into the past, and then present day, back into the past, present day.
That's
so
cool.
I thought it's really well put together, really well edited. I loved it. I Zendaya just looks like she was having the time of her life, and I don't know, it's like good for her. It was a good for her movie, kind of.
Well, we're definitely gonna watch it in our house. You know, Betsy loves Zendaya, so I just have to wait 9 years for it to be age appropriate.
I need to sit her down and be like, we're gonna wait a very long time for you to see this.
Mm-hmm.
Can you skip those parts? Is she able, like, at home, would you able to, like,
skip? Why would you skip those parts, Mikey?
Yeah.
If I'm going to see it, those are the bits I want to see. That and some really good serve and volley action.
Mm.
That's what I'm there for.
Yeah, how's the actual tennis in the movie?
Oh, it's awesome. I don't want to, like, say how things are filmed, because I think that's part of the fun of it.
The camera's the ball.
Maybe.
There's a little tortoise, and he's going around Wimbledon green. With a camera on his head like a GoPro. Is it that?
He's actually the line judge, so you're right. Yeah.
They are slow.
But he just keeps going, love, love. Love serving love. Can't keep score.
Well, I'm glad you got out of the house, because you need to get out of the house every once in a while, you do, don't you? Mm-hmm. Drives you mental being in the house otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, it's all right, though. It could be weird. I like my house, so, you know, sometimes it's nice being at home.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
It's very passive aggressive. Yeah. Well, listen, we've had some big business in our house this week. And I feel a bit overwhelmed by it, really. So I'm going to share it with you two now. So this week at school, Betsy lost a tooth. She lost a tooth. I think she just pulled it out, yanked it out. And she came home with it in a little envelope. School put it in a little envelope for her. And it's already like a pre sort of designed one for the tooth fairy. So the school I've got obviously got a load of these envelopes that they've got for kids' teeth when they just fall out. So she's got it. Yeah, tooth fairy's going to come tonight. And she's eyeing up a load of things she's going to buy with the tooth fairy money. I'm like, whoa, tooth fairies only bring you like 50p or something like that. You know, they don't bring you loads of money, do they? So I was exercising a little bit of caution. Then you will not believe what happened. The tooth fairy didn't even bloody come, right?
Oh.
The tooth fairy, right? The tooth fairy did not come. We had a long think about what had happened. What? Maybe the tooth fairy had been working really hard in another job all day the day before, and maybe had just sat down to watch some TV or something and nodded off. And then when they woke up, forgot to go on their tooth fairy round. Maybe something like that. Or maybe it was because Betsy didn't actually put it under her pillow. So we settled on that one. It was because she didn't put it under the pillow. She left it slightly out. And I said, well, Betsy, that's what they do. They check the pillow. They don't check the side of the bed.
That's good.
I mean, we all know that, don't we? Marcy's nodding. She knows that. Yeah. She's got that parent handbook now that she's a parent. So we were all set. Second night. It was under the pillow. Under the pillow. You're not going to believe what happened.
Oh, no.
The tooth fairy did come again. Two nights in a row. Started to think that maybe this tooth fairy.
What are the odds?
I know. Maybe has a substance abuse problem. doesn't know how to do their job properly. Oof. And me and Bets had a real, real heart to heart about this. She said, she's maybe, Dad. Maybe she just doesn't want my tooth. And maybe it's just not clean enough, or it's not right. I said, Betsy, don't worry. There's nothing wrong with your tooth. There was something wrong with it. It was cracked and everything. It wasn't a good tooth. So there's nothing wrong with your tooth. Probably what's happened is she's gone on her rounds the night before. I'm calling her a her, but I don't know what their tooth fairy's pronouns are. They've gone on their round the night before. They've gone, right, no tooth at that house. There's probably not going to be a tooth there the next night. That's not how it works, is it? Tooths don't just miraculously appear. I said, that's what's happened. They've just thought, right, no tooth there Tuesday. There's not going to be one on Wednesday. I'll skip it. And I'll go around to Vera's house, because her teeth are falling out like nobody's business. So we agreed that's probably what happened. But to make sure that the tooth fairy actually came the next night, we wrote a letter and said, listen, we hope you do like this tooth. We're sorry if it's a bit cracked and stuff.
Oh.
But, you know, come on, take the flipping tooth and leave us some money. And then, luckily, the tooth fairy did come that night. And strangely enough, must have felt quite guilty and left a significant amount of money.
I was going to say.
Presumably to make up for the fact that they were negligent in their chosen field of vocation.
Late fees.
Yeah, but now Betsy's made up, really, because she's a millionaire. She's a bloody tooth fairy millionaire.
I'm surprised she hasn't ripped out more teeth.
She, do not be tempted. Iris, when Iris saw the shenanigans that was going on, she was like shoving ice creams in her mouth as fast as anybody's business. And then she kept going, oh, tooth sore. And she's yanking at something in her mouth. You leave it alone, Iris. You've got some years of growing to do, and you clean those teeth. We've all learned something.
Well, if you want, you could tell Betsy that actually happened to over here my house. And then the next night, the Tooth Fairy actually left a note to them saying, I apologize. And there was a reason why that they couldn't do it.
Well, the Tooth Fairy did leave a note this time around as well to apologize. And when Bets, my oldest daughter, was reading the said note, she exclaimed loudly, "This looks like your writing, Dad." And I thought, wow, what a coincidence that was. Because, I mean, I'm not sure my handwriting looks much like a fairy's handwriting, because fairies write very delicately, and their hands can't even hold a pen or a pencil, like a real size pencil. So I told her she was incorrect, you know? And I believe that's maybe what the young people call gaslighting. But I told her...
What's funny is, like, our Tooth Fairy, the handwriting looked like my handwriting, except with the other hand. As if I wrote it with the other hand. That's what it looked like.
That's interesting. That is interesting. I do some things with my other hand, but not writing letters. I mean, I don't know why I said that, because I definitely did not write that letter to the Tooth Fairy. Yeah.
Well, I hope Marcy's taking notes for this occurrence that could happen with Kaya. Notes. Yeah, with Kaya. It happened. I mean, it's happened to both our houses. So.
It's happened. Look, it's happened to us. And you look at the state of me and Mikey. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't think that we would be the type of people that tragedy would befall.
Mm-hmm.
But it happened.
Oh, I keep thinking of that Bluey episode where the Easter Bunny forgot them the year before. They're like, does the Easter Bunny hate us?
Oh, yeah.
We have to keep reassuring each other. No, you're a good kid. Easter Bunny does not hate you.
Yeah. God, speaking of Bluey, have you been watching the new episodes?
Oh, God.
Have you got the new episodes over there?
Yeah.
Did you get the feature-length one?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The sign.
That was a mess.
Knocked my socks off. How about a callback to that onesie episode as well, Marcy? Did you pick up that?
Oh yeah, I wasn't sure if that's what it was or not, but I'm very happy about that. So
Just I was a mess by the end of that when that bloody song kicks in. And anyway, spoilers for this Bluey episode if you've not seen it and you want to be emotionally crippled when that song kicks in and Bandit lifts the sign up. Yes, Bandit.
Kev over it when I was listening to Escape Hatch on our tape deck network, and at the end Kev said he's probably not going to have kids, but like he's wondering all he hears is people talking about Bluey. Should he watch this show like as an adult? And I think like it's an interesting question, because it's like if you don't have kids, like would you watch Bluey? And it's sort of like I feel like
we watched it before we had Kaya. Yeah? Actually, like when we were trying and we had like a really bad time. Like, we watched Bluey to cheer ourselves up, actually, so Bluey helped us out a lot. And then we were so excited to watch it with Kaya once she was here. So, yeah, I think Bluey's great. I mean, sometimes I'll have it on, we'll do bedtime, and then I'll just put it back on after she goes to bed.
Yeah.
I think you got to reframe that question, Kev. So listen closely, turn up the volume on your pothole. The question is, do you want to watch one of the greatest TV shows ever made? If the answer is yes, then you will watch Bluey. Yeah. If you want to watch 7 to 8 minutes of emotional gut punch filled with brevity and laughter, then you will watch Bluey. Okay? That is something that will happen.
Good point.
Anything that you've been up to, Mikey?
Oh, yeah. Well, speaking of Escape Hatch, Catcher, Beautiful Catcher, was on the last episode, and he was fantastic on it. And him and actually Dale from Bat and Spider both talked about something called Fallout on Prime Video.
We just started it last night.
Completely forgot about the show until they started talking about
man.
It.
We just started it last night. We watched 3 episodes last night. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You're ahead of me. What I was going to say is like my watching for this podcast is, I'll be honest with you. It's 15 minutes with my morning cereal, 12 to 15 minutes. And that's how I watch everything in those bursts. And so I caught up on our show and I was able to put on the first episode. And so like I'm 98% done and it's actually really good. And all the things they were saying was like, it's based on a video game. So you think it's just sort of for that crowd, but I don't think so at all. I think they take it very seriously.
I think it's, I don't know anything about the game, but you know what? I didn't know anything about The Last of Us either. And I really like that. a lot too. So I think it's kind of cool that they're getting video games right finally. This isn't like a Prince of Persia, Jake Gyllenhaal situation.
Oh, well, it's almost like we haven't done a movie called Mortal Kombat. That is amazing.
Well, that's perfect. That's a masterpiece. I'm just saying, like, they got it right, and then they messed it all up after that, and now we're back on track. It just took a while.
Ketcher and I actually played The Last of Us, and he's a big fan of it, and he of the game, and he did not like the show, and I kind of I fell off of it, too, so it was interesting.
Wow.
And he's a Fallout, or he played the game, and I played, like, the third one 15 years ago. And he's weird, and it is like walking around. They take those elements and actually see it in a, I don't know. They did it right, because there's a lot of like story in there. You don't think so, because it is just like a first person shooter, and the story kind of, you discover it. But this is really, they don't go over the, beat you over the head with exposition or anything. And it's kind of like, I think there's multiple characters that they're weaving together. It's pretty good. So I'm gonna keep going.
Yeah, I really liked it. Like, we watched the first episode last night, and I just said, you want to keep watching this? Because we were going to try to watch a movie last night, and then we ended up liking that so much that we kept watching it. But Dirk would like it because Agent Dale Cooper is
in
it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know that. I probably will watch it, but I tell you what, that Fallout game is definitely something I'll never play in my entire life. It's like one of those open world games, I think, isn't it, Mikey? Is it open world?
It's more RPG. It's like it's open world. Like if you played Skyrim or the Elder Scroll games.
It's like, it's when they say like 75 hours worth of game time. Yeah, I'm like, exactly. That is too much. Exactly. You've already identified for me, this is not something I will see through to completion. So I can't do it. But I am interested when I play in the TV show.
I think I do like 10 minutes or 10 hours or at the most. I'm like, all right, I get it. I get how this is. I don't have time for this.
Those games normally I'll play for a bit, like when you first get them, I'll make time for it, but then very quickly the time disintegrates and I can't remember how to do it again when I get back into it. And I can't remember what part of the game I was up to or anything else. It's just like, what is the point of this?
Well, I'm all about like the aesthetic and the art direction of those things, and like this show I think does it really well. They take a lot of those elements and enhance it on it, so give it a whirl. Beautiful. If you're a fan or if you're not. Even like Marcy said, she didn't even play the game, and like it's good just for the story.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've done like real good recommendations this week. We've done Challenges, Bluey, mm-hmm. Fallout, and Two Fairies. We have done.
Oh wait, I have one more, and this is specifically for you, Dirk. But Conan O'Brien's new travel show is out, and it is freaking hilarious.
Where does he travel to, Marcy? I'm going to humor you for a little bit.
He goes to Norway in the first episode. And then I think the other, we only watched the Norway one so far, but Thailand's another one. And then I forget. There's only 4 episodes so far for the new season. But I love Conan, and I'm going to get you to love Conan one day. So help me God.
Well, hopefully that show's not available over here, so I can't watch it.
I mean, you're just going to pull a Bear and not watch it anyways, so it's fine.
You've got to learn how it works with me, Marcy, right? You've got to learn how it works. Just subtlety.
I have to just play hard to get and pretend like I hate something to get you to watch it.
Pretty much. Well, okay, shall we talk about this movie?
Yes, let's talk about the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie.
Jean-Claude Van Damme. We're here. The only reason people have listened to this episode is to hear about No Retreat, No Surrender, a film from 1986, my pick for Rediscovery Mixed, directed by Corey Yun, produced by Ung Si Yun, and starring Jean-Claude Van Damme and some other people, including Kurt McKinney, in the main role as Jason. Right, well, listen, this film, we're going to get into it, but as a bit of context, I did do a bit of research and found this write-up from Seattle Karate Quarterly from 1986, which is a journalist writing about the events at the culmination of this movie.
Wow, this must have been a microfiche. I think it was. Yeah.
That's probably what it was, Mikey. But just digitally scanned into the internet. Oh, I got you.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
But for some reason, I have to read this in just a voice that is not my own accent. for some reason. Okay. Last night at the Kingswood Sports Center, Seattle, we saw the first ever full contact karate exhibition, pitting the New York State champions, the Manhattan Maulers, against the hometown heroes, the Seattle Sidekicks. Rumors around town were saying that behind all the pomp and posing, real stakes were at play. A story old as time. Organized crime gangs consisting of upper middle class white men in suits and geographically diverse martial artists had come to claim yet another dojo for their own. Will organized crime ever tire of malevolent takeover bids targeted at leisure clubs whose activities are aimed squarely at the preteen and teen demographic? It seems not likely. The crowd, however, had faith in the Kingswood kids to defend local honor. All their favorites were competing. Dean, High Hair Ramsey, Kelly's strange older brother, and Frank. In a shocking twist fit for a narrative set on revenge, the New York interlopers put up only one competitor. An awesome machine of annihilation and slick back hair. The man with the strongest leg abductors in the world, the Russian, Ivan Krasinski. Suffice to say, Gorbachev's boy did not go over well with the audience. He did, however, roll through the sidekicks. One by one, they fell until Ivan flipped, going into business for himself, looking to put Kelly's strange older brother in the morgue. The gathered masses looked on in horror, but one man, nay, one hero, had all he could stand, and he could stand no more. A 17-year-old, seemingly called Jason, dressed all in red, wearing more hairspray than you could fathom, jumped into the ring, challenging Ivan. Now, I am not one to extrapolate backstory based on body language and eye contact, but it seemed to me they had met before. And I'm sensing Ivan and his mob ran Jason's dad out of a similar dojo in L.A., forcing the family to relocate to Seattle. Sadly, thanks to a mix of shame and chronic pain caused by a leg injury, Jason's dad had turned very, very grumpy. I see a scenario, a final straw, if you will, where in the despondent father tears his son's Bruce Lee poster off of the wall. An act so cruel, it sends his offspring to the very grave of his fallen hero, Sensei Lee. Hmm. I can only imagine that led to Jason receiving fighting lessons from the ghost of Bruce Lee, preparing him for this very moment. Now, that may seem all poppycock, but at least Jason brought his girlfriend a rabbit, and he has a black best friend who raps and enjoys breakdancing. Climactically, our hero saw off the offending European, proving that for the victor, there is no retreat and no surrender. So that was the article.
Amazing.
And it seemed to me, it was quite a detailed article, really.
I mean, that's a lot of reports. The reporter really went into like some sort of...
They sounded like they were from Boston.
Yeah. So, I mean, some people say that reporter probably should have just written less words. That's what they wrote back in 1986 in the Seattle Karate Quarterly. So, no retreat, no surrender. Rediscovered. So, rediscovered. Shall I explain why this is a rediscovery? So,
please. That's why we're here.
That is why we're here. That's why we're all gathered here. No retreat, no surrender. So 1986. So I was taking karate lessons around 1986, which I did for a number of years as a boy. I was going to say as a small boy, but probably a boy is a more accurate description. And we had Karate Kid by now. That was out before this. So we were all, we're all into karate. And
that made you want to take karate?
Well, I think the 80s were a crazy place, right, Mikey? Yeah. In that it felt like karate. And I feel like this movie as well captures this perfectly. It felt like karate was one of the most important things in the world in the 1980s. It felt like you had to do karate.
It was the Starbucks of the 80s. It was like a karate.
It was.
Yeah.
felt like if you weren't doing karate, then what were you doing? Crocheting, knitting, get out of town, mate. So we were all at it. Even over here in the UK, we were turning up in farmhouses and doing our katas and our roundhouse kicks. And there was, like I said, Karate Kid, the movie had been out. But then there was this talk of this other film, No Retreat, No Surrender as well, sort of bubbling around sort of in the background. And I remember at the time also that it was when a lot of Bruce Lee chat was going on, a lot of Bruce Lee chat. And I was not a teenager. Or I was just, you know, becoming a teenager, maybe. I didn't know who Bruce Lee was. And people would say to me, do you think Bruce Lee can jump over that building? I was like, who's Bruce Lee? What? How could he jump over that building? And they would turn to me and go, he could jump over that building. So there was like a real mystique and a real mythology about Bruce Lee, certainly in my neck of the woods around that sort of time.
Yeah.
And I think this film fell into my lap at exactly the right time when I was knee deep in getting me belts and this fascination with the kind of the lore of Bruce Lee at the same time. And I think then after there is a real trend for this sort of high action martial arts movies from America that are not necessarily. So Karate Kid was much more of a sort of a safe story, I guess. Like it's a kid's film. I don't think this is a kid's film. I don't think it's a kid's film. I mean, it's a film with kids as the main characters, but I don't know if it's a kid's film. And certainly the martial arts we see on display is quite different to the martial arts we saw in Karate Kid in that it's a bit more stylized and it's a bit more high energy. It's a bit more high impact, I think.
It seems like a rebuttal to Karate Kid. Like it definitely felt like somebody, they watched it. Mm-hmm. And they said, like, no, that's not real karate. Somebody that had karate prowess, and they were like, yeah, we should do it right. Because it was basically almost the same movie, and they were like, let's do this. Do it right. Do it darker. So
it was something that I watched a lot as a kid, you know, and I can still imagine, I can still hear the lines, no retreat, no surrender. I can still see the scene when they say no retreat, no surrender in my head, you know, forever, you know, over many, many years. But I haven't seen it in a good old long time. And it's one of those films that when you just think about it, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme's playing a Russian. the kid gets some karate lessons off the ghost of Bruce Lee. Is it good? Is it? Or is it just something that you enjoy at a certain period in your life? So that is why we are here. We are rediscovering it together. There we go. That's why I picked it.
I don't see how you start taking karate, then watch this movie and never quit karate. Like, exactly. I would just think you'd be like double black belt by now, just because you could never stop.
Had either of you heard of the film before?
Never.
No. Never. And I keep wanting to call it No Regret.
Yeah, no, I have no regret.
Do your job properly, Marcy.
I'm sorry.
What about films like Best of the Best? Have you heard of Best of the Best?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I feel for me, Best of the Best is a bit of a, is like, a continuation of this style of film.
Yeah,
so, I love No Retreat, No Surrender was like the gateway into this world. And then I think Best of the Best later on became, oh my goodness, have you seen, this is incredible. This is what life is about, this movie.
Yeah.
So I think that's how it leads up into the steps. I was listening. So it is a American movie, but it is directed and produced by, I think, Seasonal Films. So they are a Hong Kong martial arts movie company. It's quite an interesting story how it came to be. So the screenwriter, Keith Strandberg, he was a martial artist who could speak Cantonese, I think it was, and lived in China for a period of time just working. And he just contacted a load of movie studios and said, you know, do you fancy doing movies in America, because I'd be up for it if you fancy. He'd never been in the movie business in his entire life, and he was just grifting and, you know, to try and get something going on, and everybody would just shut the door and wouldn't even really let him in for an interview. But then it was, I think, Ung Si Yun, who is the owner, I guess, of Seasonal Films, who did have a conversation with him, and they got on pretty well over during that. And so he said, look, if we ever do anything in America, I'll get in touch with you. And a couple of years roll by, and then he does gets in touch with him. That's and awesome. They come up, and they make no retreat, no surrender. The idea being, this is a typical sort of Hong Kong action movie, but with a westernized sort of narrative. It's a pretty cool little story, and it is the first of its kind, really, like an American Hong Kong style martial arts film. But is it something you enjoyed? Is it something you enjoyed, Marcy? He says while she's laughing into a microphone.
It's kind of all over the place, but I was having fun, like laughing, trying to follow along with some things. I don't want to spoil everything just yet, but I think we'll go through the movie and we can talk about the scenes that delighted me while watching.
Well, it's a movie filled with martial artists rather than actors. So that's a big thing. So Kurt McKinney, who is Jason, the main guy, he's a martial artist. And then even like, obviously, Jean-Claude Van Damme's in it. And this was his first real big movie. Big, I'm doing the air quotes. This is his first sort of main role. And in fact, you know, after this, his next one was Bloodsport, I guess, when it really sort of kicks off for him. But most of them are just like karate people, like Ian, like all the fighters in the dojos, like Kelly's weird older brother, the instructor at the dojo who decides to take it out on Jason. You know, they're all, none of them are actors. They're martial artists.
Are you telling me his dad is not an actor?
Dad is not an actor. Hold on a second. I'm going to do an impression. I'm just going to get away from the microphone. Jason!
Jason! And I am.
I couldn't get over his style of acting right in the beginning. It's almost like somebody's told him, you've got to act with your body as well as the words coming out of your mouth. Mm-hmm. And some of his quotes right at the beginning when he goes, I won't join your organization. And then when he goes, karate is not to be used aggressively. But if I have no other choice.
That was pitch perfect. That was good.
Oh, it was so good. Yeah, so Mr. Stillwell, whatever his real name was, he was a famous martial artist as well. So these are all martial art people. They're not actors. Who were the actual actors in it? Can you think?
Was RJ?
RJ? The worst one.
Was the Blob kid?
Yeah.
Because he looked like the Blob from X-Men.
He did. I mean, there's no escaping that. He did look.
He basically was.
So Scott, the character's name is Scott. So Scott and RJ, they were actors. I actually thought Scott was pretty good in, like, he nailed his brief in what he had to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was just so odd.
But RJ was not a good actor at all. And Kelly obviously was an actor. But, you know, I don't think I checked her screen credits after this. I think this is literally the only thing that she...
I checked all their screen credits because I'm like, what happened to all these people? This feels like the only thing they all did. And because even this guy, the main actor, Kurt something, I thought he was actually pretty good. Like, I thought he's actually, even though you said he was a martial artist primarily, I thought he was a pretty good actor.
Well, he had a career. I think he's probably the only one who had a career. He went on to do soap operas, daytime soap operas. Okay. He was in, like... I think the General Hospital is that one. Mm-hmm. The Guiding Light. I've never heard of these things, but I checked on IMDb and they ran for like 13,000 episodes, and he was in a few hundred episodes of them each. So I mean, he got work. He did all right. All right. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you brought this research because I was definitely, you know, as I watched it, I definitely wanted to know more. Why am I watching this on YouTube? Why didn't I ever hear this movie? Why did how did this get made? Yeah,
that is fascinating to me because like everybody watched it. Like my age group in my school, we all watched it. Yeah. Everybody watched it, and that is like a little corner of Northwest England in the 1980s. So it filtered out. It wasn't just like a contained thing.
I was watching like Disney cartoons at the time, but like even like afterwards, I guess it's like then you're on. Like it just went right to the blood sports and stuff like and the best of the best. So like I think I just skipped it.
Sure. Did you? Is that the same for you, Marcy, too? Did you just go straight to Bloodsport?
I'm always so fascinated with the 80s. I was not alive for the 80s, and so it just kind of feels like a little museum going back watching these movies.
Well, I think, Marcy, you were quite keen to just go through the movie, so let's just go through it quick. Let's do little bits. Okay. But so it starts with, we're in LA, Jason is in his dad's martial arts class, and the one thing I took out of this is Jason is a right asshole, right?
Well, he kicks that kid's ass, right? Like, he just destroys that kid.
Well, that kid even wasn't, like, expecting it. They're supposed to be doing some kind of drill.
He sucker punches him.
Leaves himself open, and Jason just absolutely decks him, and everybody thinks it's really hilarious and funny. I'm like, what? He's a dick, mate. Yeah, so that didn't sit well with me this time around. Can I say, too?
I was watching, like, on YouTube in 1986, and he sort of looked like Jean-Claude Van Damme, so I thought that was, like, a young... I was like, wow, he's really young in this movie, because he's a dick, and I thought that was Jean-Claude for a second.
What I did love was that it was a massive karate dojo on like some main strip in LA, and it had trophies all in the window. That was the time to be alive, Marcy. That's meant something.
Every dojo like I ever drove by when I was younger, that's what they all look like.
Yeah.
With all the trophies in the
window. I love the aesthetic of that, like the paint peeling and like the Chryslers parked outside from the 80s and stuff like that. It was awesome.
They'll be very quickly get the organized crime mob coming into this dojo.
Of course.
I mean, that's the natural narrative choice. Yeah. That organized crime.
Mm-hmm. You got too big.
Are going to want to take over this dojo. What was your feelings here, Marcy?
Well, every time the bad guys showed up, the score reminded me of the Tron Legacy score by Daft Punk.
Well, you've been very generous with that.
No, I mean, seriously, every time the bad guy showed up, it reminded me of one specific song in the Tron Legacy soundtrack, and I thought that was pretty cool. But then the rest of the score was, like, it was decent. It wasn't as good as that.
What? I was going to say Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, no. They listened to this. This score was amazing. And it was, and like, a producer or something like that.
And they wrote Challengers. Yeah,
wasn't one of the producers that did the...
Actually, wait. Oh, no, they wrote this.
Yeah, had the same last name as the producers. And so, like, I think it was, like, a brother. It was... Throughout, like, even, like, the sweet parts, they did a lot of work, and it was awesome. I love this score. That was one of my positives of this. It was cheesy at times, but it was, like, awesome.
I really thought, though, when this all started, I was like, this is definitely an answer to Karate Kid. But then as soon as you see Jean-Claude Van Damme, I was like, this is also an answer to Ivan Drogo. Is that what his name is in Rocky? So I was like, this is definitely like a hybrid of... So you're saying this isn't a kid's movie, but I think it's like a hybrid between Rocky and Karate Kid. And you get this, so...
I think it's not a young kid's movie like Karate Kid. You can watch that at any age, really, can't you?
I've never seen Karate Kid.
Mikey just... is dead.
Are we... Can we do it sometime on the podcast?
I don't know.
We'll do it right now. Turn it on. Okay. Turn it on. We'll watch you watch this movie.
Yeah. We will react to you watching this movie.
Okay. We'll do a live. How about we do a live watch along of Karate Kid?
That's not a bad idea. Holy shit.
What I loved about the organized crime mob throughout the entirety of this is they never really explain why they want to buy all these dojos, do they?
Oh, that was so funny to me, though. Like, and you just knew they were going to show up again. We're like, we're taking this dojo.
It's like, we're taking your dojo. Why? Well, I mean, because all these kids pay like $5 a lesson. I don't understand what the end game here is for you in your organized crime units, and how the organized crime gang turns up with these martial artists, one of whom is dressed in full gear. Like, full gear. turns up to intimidate Jason's dad, and he's wearing his full karate gear. Like, he knew something was going to happen. He says, I'm just going to put my gear on, just in case. We call those people full kit wankers over here. Do you call them that? You know, when you go down the park and you see somebody in full football kit just having a kickabout with their mates, and the mates are just wearing jeans and a t-shirt, and he's in full Liverpool kit. You call those people full kit wankers. He was a full kit wanker.
Three flights. They bought three flight tickets to go out there to intimidate this guy across the country. But also, they're going to intimidate this guy, and then they just do a one-on-one standoff. Mm-hmm. Like, you brought two guys. Why don't you right away, like, just go Jean-Claude, like, and this guy go at him and just intimidate him. Jean-Claude waits for this other guy to get his butt kicked, and then he just steps in. That's what I like.
Maybe it was like this: the full kit wanker guy had letting them down before, and it's like, this is your one chance now.
We're coming to watch.
But Marty, I know how Jean-Claude Van Damme ended up in this movie. Mm.
Okay.
He auditioned for it. They had like thousands of people audition for this movie, because I think they put it out in like some karate magazine. You want to be in this movie? And they had too many. They had too many people. Wow. So I think the guy, the script writer Keith Strandberg, who seems to be like pretty much heavily involved in this, he just got all the headshots and just went like 10 guys or something, and just went, we'll just look at these 10 guys.
Get out.
And one of them was Jean-Claude Van Damme. What happens is Jean-Claude, I was going to say mortally wounds the dad, but it's not mortally wounds, is it? He goes for the knee, like in Karate Kid, and that's it. But Jason's dad, he's in traction in hospital, and he does that really beautiful bit of internal thinking that we can all hear. And he decides they're just going to move. So off they go. And I thought this was really quite nice, this quite beautiful, the scene where they move from LA to Seattle, and we got all the sort of like little shots of the scenery. And I thought the score was quite nice here as well, Mikey. Did you have this in your movie?
But I love the transition, because before that, the dad says, he's in the hospital. This is the only voiceover that you've ever heard in the whole movie. And he goes, I just have to, the only way I can do it, I have to move my family away from Los Angeles. And we have to go all the way up to Seattle. We have to. But I love the transition from the grit of LA to Seattle.
Can I just say, I did not pick up that Jason was his son.
I didn't either.
And I was did they abduct this child?
I didn't know that at first.
And I was very concerned for a little bit.
Pretty sure he calls him dad at one point in that opening scene.
I didn't catch that at all.
So they moved to Seattle. I don't know who got a job there, probably the mum, but we see the dad working later on, I guess. But they're in Seattle now. And immediately, Jason meets his new best friend, RJ. One of the world's worst basketball players. He is the microcosm of everything white Americans thought black people were in the 80s, isn't he?
I was actually surprised that it was an American. Would you say he was American that spoke Cantonese? But like, I just felt like it was like a Hong Kong based scriptwriter, and this was like his interpretation of what black people must be like in America at that time.
I think there's definitely influences there, and I think we see some of those influences a bit with what's his name, Scott the bully as well, the way he like shoves burgers in his mouth and stuff like that, which just seems a bit like
it's like an anime characters of themselves.
It really reminded me of a John Waters movie. Like just like like especially when he has to be cleaning the house.
Oh yeah,
and he's just like not doing it, and I don't know. It just reminded me of Divine for some reason.
I could see that. I could see that, Marcy.
Yeah, just like nice little like homemade touch. There's nothing wrong with that at all. I definitely got that vibe from it. But he was weird. I thought of the Blob immediately. I don't know. I was so perplexed. Like he just immediately hated them both, and then he was like in the whole movie. I was so shocked, and then people were actually listening to him.
He goes on a very strange journey because he really hates RJ for reasons we never discover.
<Find out. laughs>
Even though one of his mates says, "Hey, you really hate this kid. Why?" And he goes, "Don't worry about it," or something like that. So he never even tells them why, even though he's given the opportunity to explain why. So I just presumed he was racist. But I don't know if that is. I don't know if that is true. But he's like the leader of a gang with a load of flunkies at one point, and then in the second half of the movie, he's like the lower pecking order of the karate gang as well. He's like in loads of different gangs, isn't he?
I could not believe he was in the Seattle dojo. I was like, excuse me, what?
He must be rich because he buys everybody burgers as well. You know. I mean,
that was weird. Like, stick with me and you'll never go hungry again. Like, what is this guy's scar? Like, what are we doing?
there was a bit with Scott and RJ when Scott says, "I told you you couldn't run away for forever." And I wrote down, "This is literally the first we're hearing about it." And it's like, "I told you you couldn't run away." And like, what? We never heard about this before in our life, mate.
That is what was so great about this movie. It's just so, it was like so many different scenes were missing. Like, I really don't feel like they stressed enough that Jason was that guy's son in the beginning, and I just thought he was going with them to learn more karate.
Well, the other bit like that, now this is gonna blow your mind maybe a little bit now, but I also thought that the Jason and Kelly romance just kind of came out of nowhere. Now let me finish my bit and then you tell me something about the movie that you watched. But in the movie I watched, Jason is in Seattle. He just turns up at Kelly's birthday party, which looked like a rager, and he's got a present, and they open it up and it's a live animal. It's a live animal in that box. And she's like, "Oh, how did you know?" And he's like, "Well, you know, when we went around looking at everything, you should." I'm like, "When did you do that, mate? We have never seen this girl before in our life. And when did all of this happen?" Now, is this the same? Is this the same version of the movie that you watched? Yeah.
Yeah, but they do say eventually, like, "We met last summer in LA, and you remembered me." I would like a deleted scene of them at the pet store. That sounds like a good time, though.
This is where I'm going to blow your mind, Mikey. You're going to say something.
Well, there's one more scene. Do you have the scene too? Where, because I was watching it, I was like, "Oh, this is maybe a YouTube edit." Because I was watching late, and I thought like I wasn't paying attention, and I thought like I was like, because he's getting dressed with RJ, and RJ's like, "Oh, you look good. Who's the lucky girl?" He's like, "Oh, you know," and they start talking about girls. Like, whoa, I totally missed this. What happened? I was like, and then I was like, it's got to be a YouTube edit. And then I watched it. I watched this movie twice because now I'm like, I'm gonna look for the scene. They go to the pet store, and then I was like,
so. There are two versions of this movie.
Do they go to the pet store?
And I think in one of them, there is a previous scene where they introduce Jason and Kelly's as a romance. No, in Seattle. So I was listening to the director's commentary. I was listening to the screenwriter's commentary for a podcast. And then I'm hearing this new scene, this scene that I have like not watched. On my movie, and I've probably seen the movie twice by the time I'm listening to this screenwriter's thing. I'm going, what the heck is this? So it turns out there are two versions, but I'm surprised because the American version is the one with Kelly and Jason sort of meeting up in Seattle and going to the pet store or whatever and stuff. But in the international version, which is longer by about 15 minutes, doesn't even put that scene in it. It's longer by 15 minutes, but you couldn't have like an establishing... couldn't establish their bloody romance.
That poor bunny.
Yeah.
Felt so bad for that bunny.
I quite liked it, Mikey. In a way, once I got used to the idea, right, well, they're just not going to introduce stuff. We're just going to have to accept it on face value. It felt a bit like comics. Like, they were just deciding what is the quickest way to get you to the point where you needed to know it. These people knew each other. They met in LA. We got that. Although, I did find it funny that they couldn't spend any time, you know, building up the backstory of those two. But when Jason goes to the dojo in LA, at one point, I think his name's, what's his name? Oh, God, what's his name? Dean. The instructor says, "Come here, I'll take you to the locker." And then they walk for about like 20 seconds and he goes, "Here's the locker." And like, what? We have time for that? We have time for that? But you can't establish their romance beforehand?
Well, I'll tell you what I liked about it is because it shows you that there's other things going on. They never go to school. These are high school kids. You never see one bus, one school. Oh, yeah. All their only job is to do kung fu and karate and stuff like that. That's it. And go to parties because and stuff. That's it.
Karate is life.
Karate.
That's
and train.
What this movie
and train.
Establishes. Yeah. Karate is life. So we see, we've introduced all the players now. I think we've got Jason.
Yeah.
I think we need to bring up one important thing.
Okay.
So they do go to the gravesite of Bruce Lee.
They do.
Bruce Lee is a very big part of this movie. Did not know he was buried in Seattle. That was fascinating to me. Does anybody know why he's buried in Seattle?
I don't know why he is buried in Seattle. I presume that must be where... He lived in America, was it not?
I don't know. Oh, I really
San Francisco.
Don't know.
He was living in San Francisco, I thought.
I don't know why he's buried in Seattle.
That seemed interesting to me.
That's his real grave, though, as well, I think, right? And yeah, I'm like thinking, how did you get permission to
Why was Bruce Lee buried in Seattle?
Well, they probably didn't.
According to the Clio, as a measure of Lee's massive influence, the otherwise undistinguished gravestones are ranked number 38 out of number 459 things to do in Seattle on TripAdvisor. 1,127 reviews on Google.
He chose to be buried in Seattle. That's what it says here.
We've got all the players established. Got Jason, our hero. RJ, his best mate. Kelly, his girlfriend. We've got Scott, the bully. Got Dean with the high hair. And we've got Kelly's strange older brother who runs the dojo.
And Bruce Lee.
We've not got Bruce Lee yet. We've not got that bit yet.
I'm just saying. Yeah. We've talked about it.
And we've got Jason's dad. And we've got organized crime who now turn up in Seattle. Jeez, can you believe it? To try and take over Kelly's strange older brother's dojo for their nefarious means.
How about Dean, though? We forgot about the story plot where he's interested in Kelly, and he just, like, walks up to her and sexually assaults her in front of everybody without her consent.
Yeah.
Or how about, like, even, like, I'm going to call him the Blob. I'm sorry. But when the Blob, when they're at the Seattle dojo, and he's like, oh, Jason said L.A. karate is better than Seattle karate, and then that just starts everything.
He did? Like, what the? He did, huh? It's so good. Just like, what?
Okay.
but you're hitting on some good points here, Marcy, because there is a campaign of negativity towards Jason in Seattle. He does not settle in well, despite the best attempts of RJ, despite the best attempts of Kelly. The local dojo doesn't want him involved, and he's all upset. He's getting in a load of fights, and his dad is not happy. His dad is really angry with him. And in an act similar to going into your kid's Minecraft game and wiping the entire Minecraft game, he rips his son's Bruce Lee poster off the wall.
It was very, and this is before, you know what, it might have inspired the Little Mermaid whenever Triton goes and destroys all of her stuff.
Exactly, exactly.
Just saying.
I'm sure Walt Disney was paying very close attention to this movie. Yeah.
The dad wasn't just like Triton, though. Like, he did understand him. He was like a guy that grew up on, he's a karate instructor, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. I feel like there was like a depth to him where he's like, I spent my whole life about karate and I see my son doing the same thing and I don't want him to be like me. I don't want him to give into this life of violence. And he was had more depth than what I think they were writing him at.
And I think he was perhaps the only one who really was like a true spirit of karate. He was like, no, we shouldn't fight. This is self-defense. And obviously that was what Bruce Lee was trying to, when we meet Bruce Lee, the ghost of Bruce Lee in a little bit, he was trying to get Jason to understand that as well. Whereas I think in every other scene, it was just like karate is cool to kick people in the head with.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? Whereas his dad was genuinely like saying, no, you mustn't fight or walk away. Because his dad gets a job in that bar. And even when he throws out the guy who is pouring beer over his head and taking the mick out of him, he just kind of just puts him in an arm bar and just chucks him out. Doesn't do a spin kick and knock his head off or anything like that, does he?
Yeah, and that's a great point. I think that's what bothered me, is that his son never like apologizes for being like an asshole to him and eventually doing exactly what... Actually, no, he didn't do it in self-defense, though. This kid was starting fights with everybody. He was just trained to fight everybody. He never got the message.
He was very happy to get involved in fights. Yeah. There was never one point when he was like, listen, we could fight, but I can only use my martial arts and self-defense. There was never a moment like that, was there? Yeah. As soon as Scott started pushing RJ around, he was tornado kicking people left, right, left, right, and center.
Yeah.
But they have, the dad and Jason have this big fight. Jason's all upset, and he drives, bawling his eyes out, all the way to Sensei Lee's grave, and he asks him for guidance and help at that point, because that's what a rational, sane man would do in that moment.
Well, I like it, though, because it was like his like spirit. That was like who he was hero worshipping, and he was setting his life path to Bruce Lee. He wanted to be Bruce Lee. He idolized him. So I could see that being like definitely a teenage thing, where him being like, you know, crying to a poster and being like, help me.
And eventually what happens is Jason moves all of his cool karate stuff out of an awesome garage. Oh, what an incredible garage. That garage, when they moved into the house in Seattle, I thought, wow, mate, you have hit pay dirt with the size of that place with your wooden doll and stuff in there. We moved all of that into some house that RJ knows the people have moved out of. So they're squatting basically
RJ's awesome. He's such a good friend to him. He really
is.
RJ is like Michael in 10 Things I Hate About You, where, what are you getting out of this? Yeah. You're just a good friend, good person, cool. Mm-hmm. Like,
RJ, sadly, is a plot device. That is what RJ is. He knows all the local hangouts and they're very different. Because he didn't have an iPhone, Marcy, back then in the 80s. So you couldn't just Google where's a good karate place or where can I squat and put all my Bruce Lee posters
where
up.
Squat.
But then when he's squatting in this house, what should happen? But only the bloody ghost of Bruce Lee turns up. What?
Bruce Lee coming in like a Cenobite in this
movie. He did. I loved it with the sort of the change in the lighting. So we knew something supernatural was about to happen. And in walks Bruce Lee. What I did find funny was we've seen posters all throughout this movie of Bruce Lee. And then in comes a guy who is not that person on the poster. And we have to believe it is Bruce Lee.
No, I liked it. I liked that they didn't just do like, let's do the back of his head or let's just do something. Yes. They're just going for it. And the guy did a really good job, I thought, as Bruce Lee.
He's a professional Bruce Lee impersonator, pretty much.
So in real life, are you making a joke? Yeah.
No. I think he's been Bruce Lee in other things as well.
He was great. And I loved how he mentors him, but he kicks his asshole. Like, he's such an asshole to him the whole time.
He was. it was quite... I was laughing and smiling at some of their interactions when Bruce would just give him a little clip around the ear roll at various different moments and stuff. I really enjoyed that. And in my mind, there was more of it in this movie. I was a bit sad that I think it only lasts for about 15 minutes, the ghost of Bruce Lee sort of teaching him some karate.
I agree. I was hoping he actually was really there and he shows up at the end and the two of them go on like adventures together. As like
that would be awesome.
Or like The Simpsons, where it was like he thought it was Michael Jackson. He thought he was like in an insane asylum with Michael Jackson. And it turned out it was just a guy like impersonating Michael Jackson. And then it was the actual guy that was like squatting in the house. He was a Bruce Lee impersonator.
it would be funny if it was like an actual squatter.
It just happened to be a Bruce Lee lookalike.
Dirk, I think now's a good time to ask my question for you.
Go ahead.
So if you could pick anybody to be your spiritual guide, sensei, who would it be and why?
I feel like this treads similar ground to Looking for Eric, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Did you feel that as well?
100%.
Like now I'm seeing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I thought about that too, but I thought, it's similar. But we're talking about martial arts, aren't we? Fighting style.
I mean, let's just say you have an issue in your life. Maybe you have a dojo you need to protect. I don't know. Whatever your issue may be.
Good question. Do you have one to mind? Because I'm going to think about it. Do you have one for you?
I'll just say, since it's her birthday today, I'll say Audrey Hepburn.
Beautiful. I'm going to think about it for a second. But it's got to be somebody who you believe their wisdom, isn't it? Somebody you believe will always steer you right. David Bowie.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yep.
Hell.
Came to me. Just as I was saying those words out loud, just came to me immediately.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. Mikey, do you have one?
I feel like I should have one, right?
Yeah, you should have one because you're hosting this podcast and it's Marcy's asking.
I know, but she caught me off guard.
Caught me off guard. I wish I'd heard that question before we came on air, Marcy.
I asked you and you said no, so.
Let's go with Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee.
Mikey.
Bruce Leroy. Well, you know what? Like I mentioned, I just said Bruce Leroy, but I was just thinking about this. I was going to say this at the end, but. Something about the 80s and something about like this movie reminded me a lot about Miami Connection, which is like a...
Oh, I still haven't seen that.
See, like, and that's what I was going to say because you didn't ask me, Dirk. You asked Marcy. But I love this movie. I love like this type of movie. And it's like what Bat and Spider does where it's like they talk about movies that were just like low budget, just silly things. It's shot in like a month or whatever. And I love this. You know, we talk about Warm Blanket, that's what it feels like. But I started thinking, like, this reminds me of Miami Connection. This reminds me of Last Dragon. And it started creating this world where in the 80s, all these karate movies, all these kids from different areas, they get together and they know each other or something like that. Like, I would love to go back.
That would be incredible.
Yeah. And, like, this kid joins up, he links up with the Miami Connection kids and the Last Dragon, Bruce Leroy.
Because I think it is a genuinely enchanting period of time that all of these martial arts movies sort of kick out. I mean, I'm not really sort of big into like the American Ninja movies as well. We talk obviously about Bloodsport, Kickboxer with Jean-Claude Van Damme. And like I said, best of the best, of course. Love best of the best. But there's so many of them that just come out around now. It's a beautiful time for martial arts movies in America. It's a blossoming time. In fact, it's the embryonic stage of martial arts movies. Because I don't think really there was much I honestly don't think there was much before this. I don't think you can count. Karate Kid counts, of course it does. But it's not like this. And it's not like all those movies you were just mentioning then, is it?
It's like everybody that grew up watching the Bruce Lee movies finally got to the age where they could make movies in the 80s. And then they start making them.
Yes.
Yeah. The influence is finally like they're catching up and there's a wave of it. Yeah.
And that's actually more that adds more importance to Bruce Lee's ghost actually being in this movie, like passing the torch. That's actually really cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love Bruce Lee being in this. I'm going to say it's just enchanting. Yeah, I said enchanting again. It was just dreamy that Bruce Lee was in this movie. I'm doing air quotes again. I guess Bruce Lee was in this movie.
Were they doing a dub for his voice too? That's what I like too. Because
What did you think about that?
I loved it. I loved it. I thought it was so good.
Because I'm watching it and I'm going, is he? That is dubbed, but it also seems like his lips are saying the words as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Half the time.
Yeah.
But, so what they did, I found this out, was so the guy couldn't speak any English, and they had a Korean linguist come on, and they gave them the dialogue, the American-English dialogue. So this is what we want him to say. And the Korean linguist went, right, well, okay, though the lip movements will be this, so we need to match the lip movements with words in Korean. So he was just saying random Korean.
Wow.
But the lip movement.
Oh,
was
get out of here.
Yes. That's crackers.
That's clever. That's really cool. That's clever.
And if you watch it back, it does match up. It does match up. It does not match up every time, but it does match up sometimes. I think it's pretty smart, really. So we'll move on to just basically talk about the finale, shall we? Should we get to the finale now? Because it's basically.
Well, he's training. He's training. Like 45 minutes.
He was training for so long. And I was like, has Jason been gone for months? Because he's not going to school.
He's in his house.
He's not at home. He's just training.
We don't get just one. We get two training montages. That is how long he is training for in this film. And to be fair to Bruce and Jason, he's not training for anything in particular.
No.
He's not training for a tournament that's coming up. Because even Bruce Lee says, look, I'll teach you, but it can't be for revenge. It just has to be for the joy of being taught. And he's like, yes, sensei, that's all I want, just to be taught. So he's just getting good at flipping karate because Bruce Lee's ghost has risen from the grave to teach him. Who wouldn't want to do that? I was going to say, as luck would have it, an opportunity does arise to put his... all of his training montages into good use, because it turns out, and I think I don't know if they ever actually officially said it, but it looks like the organized crime are going to fight the Seattle dojos for the ownership of the dojo. Is that what you got as well? Or is it just a match? I thought it looked like they were fighting for the ownership of the dojo on TV.
Everything's
for
set.
The whole city of Seattle.
Two radio stations. One television.
you're an organized crime boss. And somebody has arranged to film it and put it on TV. I don't think I'd want my crime organization to be shown on TV. That seems like a bad move. But the the Manhattan Maulers, they're the bad guys. Mm-hmm. They're the organized crime gang against the Seattle Sidekicks. Terrible name, Seattle Sidekicks, isn't it? Like, flipping heck, you could have come up with something better than that. 3-on-3 karate match on TV, full contact. Full contact. Winner takes all. But no, that's not what actually happens, because if the three people in the Manhattan team step aside, and out comes Jean-Claude Van Damme. We saw him at the beginning. He did something real bad to Jason's dad. Mm. And now he's back. We're not seeing him again. Oh, we've seen him again a little.
No, we haven't seen him when they threaten Kelly's brother's dojo.
No.
He's there, isn't he?
No. Full Kit Wanker's there. And a guy who goes for a gun. In his suit. Jean-Claude's not there. So I think he just comes back.
That was the funniest thing too. I was going to write to you and be like, this is Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, because he's in it in the beginning of like a cameo. You pulled it over me. It was like Drew Barrymore in Scream, like, ah, they got us. It's not a Jean-Claude movie.
Oh yeah. But Jean-Claude comes out and he's going to kick everybody's butt, basically. and he takes out the first guy, who's Dean with the high hair. He takes him out easy. Then he takes out Frank easy, and then he's fighting Kelly's strange older brother. But no, he starts going, flips him in the ropes, Mikey. What do you think about that?
I'm surprised. They never do this in wrestling. I don't know why. Like, maybe you could tell me. But that's such a cool.
In the ropes.
They
tie
you up, but they never do that flip over thing. That was like.
I think the ropes aren't slack enough.
Oh, gotcha.
But Jean-Claude's kicking his butt, right? Jean-Claude's kicked everybody's butt, and it looks like another win for organized crime. Would you believe it? But what happens, Marcy?
Jason steps into the ring.
What happens is, because you weren't paying attention, Kelly goes to defend her older brother and tries to hit Jean-Claude with a stool. But Jason goes, no, Kelly, don't! And that's what draws him in, because he wasn't ready for a fight. Maybe he wasn't, Mikey. We've been selling him down the wrong avenue here. And he wasn't just looking for a fight. He only gets involved when the love of his life starts to get in perilous danger.
And well, he tried to tell them. He tried to warn them. And they were like, yes, man, we got this. And the main guy, what was his name? Jason? He was the karate champion?
Yeah, Jason.
He actually fought well. Like, that was actually a good fight with him and Jean-Claude.
Yeah, no, he was a good
It was good
fighter.
It was a good back and forth. And then Jean-Claude did some illegal moves there.
Mm-hmm. And then Jason gets in.
Jason gets in, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And all bets are off now, because this is where we needed to be. This is what we've waited
crowd
for.
Is eating it up. The crowd was
They're going
nuts.
Jason. They all know his name suddenly. They all know his name. And they're chanting it.
The rabbits there.
I mean, there could have been good 75, 80 people there in that arena watching all that.
Can I just say, when this all was going on, Dan came home from work at this point and was like, what's happening? And I said, I think he's fighting for the city of Seattle.
I think he was fighting for the city of Seattle.
Yeah. Oh boy. I mean, I gotta say, this movie is so wild and bonkers, but martial arts fighting, no matter what the plot is, just looks awesome. So that was
I like that.
It was really like good choreography.
Yes, good point.
Like the whole movie, like awesome fights. Like definitely.
I think that's what I was feeling as well. I thought the actual fight scenes were brilliant. Really good. I think they had to do a bit of a job teaching them how to fight movie style, because a lot of them were just laying the kicks in. They were like, I think Jean-Claude Van Damme knocked a couple of people out just like with his spin, because he was just spinning. I think there's when he fights Frank in the finale, he spin kicks him right in the face and he knocks him clean out. Jean-Claude, calm down,
you
mate.
You have to rehearse it. It's all choreographed, like, you know, to keep people safe and. Mm-hmm. It is really cool, though. I think I did not know that most of these people weren't actors, but it's nice to give people a chance to be in a movie with something they're good at. You know, like how many times do they use like stunt people, but like actually getting the performers that can do this is pretty cool, I think.
Yeah. I love the sound effects.
Whoosh, 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 whoosh.
Yeah,
whoosh,
so much
whoosh,
just for like a block of a
Oh,
month.
Yeah.
I love that.
I loved it.
The sped up.
I thought the final fight between Jason and Ivan the Russian was really good. It was really good. And actually, they built a lot on the training montages. And I did really like how they interspersed in the fight little clips of Jason training. Like, so where they had like Jason on the wooden man, and he's doing the close quarters stuff, like the blocking and the punching, and they flip to the ring and he's there, he's doing exactly the same thing. And then there's Jason moving out of the way of the sandbags, and it's Jason ducking out of the way of Jean-Claude's kicks. And then there's all those little rapid punches he does, and they show Jason with the sort of the chest expander just working on his punches. And so I was like, oh, flipping heck, I love that. I really, really liked it.
Yeah, it felt very much like a martial arts director. Like, everything else is just filler to give him reason to do this, which I don't mind. But like when they're doing the kung fu, is awesome. The karate. Mm-hmm.
Very good, very good. And we see the final lesson that Bruce taught Jason, which was do something unexpected, which seems to be put your foot in a noose. And use your other foot to do a really high kick. And that is what Jason finally graduated from Bruce Lee's martial arts class with, and that is the move he uses to defeat Ivan the Russian right at the end. I mean, it's almost like it was a movie written for screen. It was so pitch perfect. And everybody runs in, they all cheering his name again. Long forgotten thoughts of bullying him. Scott is probably going to buy him a burger afterwards. And Dean probably has quite, is probably going to just step aside and no longer sexually harass Kelly, his girlfriend. And there we go. That is No Retreat, No Surrender.
Perfect movie.
Yeah. What are your final thoughts on this movie?
You know what was missing in that final thing? His dad wasn't there, because I feel like they didn't really kind of reconcile there. About
his dad was in the audience, and what I liked about his dad's reaction, he was just like, "Oh, this is fun." He wasn't like worried at any point. He's just like, "Oh, there's that guy, that Ivan guy who really injured my leg.
Yeah.
I'm a bit annoyed that he's here." He was just like, "Oh, bit of karate I am here to watch." He didn't seem emotionally invested in it at all, did he?
No.
But overall thoughts of the movie, the two of you, let's bring it to a close. What do you think?
The 80s, what a time. No, I think this is like a perfect like screenshot of the 80s. Like, just the time the movie's coming out, like we were saying, like what the generation that made these movies, like what interests them. Yeah, I don't know. I had fun. It was different. It felt like it was missing some plot points, but I mean, we went from point A to point B, and that's all you need to do. So we did it.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes we went from point A to point F without any of the steps in between.
Mm-hmm. And that is why I will say I love this movie for that reason. Not only the kung fu, but like all the like the silliness and the ridiculous stuff you could call it. But it was just like you could not recreate this. Age of movies is over. You could never recreate this movie again. And that's why it's wonderful. It's like it's probably maybe nostalgia for the 80s. Everything you said, Marcy, but like it is just like. You could sit and just like smile. You could watch this with somebody and just laugh about it. It's fun.
Yeah. It was on me to see whether I did rediscover this film. It'd been a long time since I'd watched it. There were bits that I built up in my head. Like I definitely thought Bruce Lee was in it more than he was. But I loved all the karate kung fu scenes. I thought they were great. I had a really great laugh at the other bits. There were, you know, things that perhaps I enjoyed ironically, maybe, but still enjoyed and created an overall picture of loveliness. And how can you knock a movie that is called No Retreat, No Surrender, and somebody says it three times in the movie? No Retreat, No Surrender.
I love how they just said it. Like they said, the two friends, the first time they said it, it was like they've said it a million times.
It felt like they'd been saying it all their life. Like they knew what one person was going to say.
No Retreat?
And it was just like,
No Surrender.
You got it. No Surrender, mate.
You got it.
Exactly. Well, there we go. If you want to watch No Retreat, No Surrender over in the UK, it is on the free Amazon channel thing with the adverts, but I got like two adverts in it. So it's not really a big deal. And don't worry about adverts in this, but it is also on the YouTube. Now is the point of the show where we spin kick our way over to the ghetto blaster and we focus on music and we become the music mixtape. And we think about songs that connect to this movie in some way or reminders of this movie, some themes or whatever. You know, this is what we do. This is why we're the movie mixtape. And if you look down in the show notes, you'll see a link to to our Spotify playlist, which has all the previous song choices in there. Mikey, do you want to go first?
I'll go first, quick, because the only thing is just the song sounds like it goes into, especially like the music montages. My song is by a band called Racer X. That's a song, Heart of a Lion, because that's what he possesses. It's a heart of a lion to just keep fighting. And that song sounds like something perfect, like for an 80s movie. And that's, I finally found the movie for it to match up with.
I mean, already sounds incredible. Racer X, Heart of a Lion. Woo-hoo! I know what I'm listening to when I brush my teeth tonight. Marcy?
I hope that you still want to talk to me after I explain myself.
Sounds like maybe not.
I had no idea where I was going to go with this.
She picked the theme song to Curb Your Enthusiasm for her.
And then I realized...
The Office.
I was a little bit inspired and was like, you know, sometimes you just have to think outside of the box. And I was like, you know, I really had empathy for one character in this movie. And I decided to pick my song for that character. So I picked 400 Bones by Frightened Rabbit because that damn rabbit, I felt so bad for it. 400
bones crumpled in bed. I'm the only one who knows that you're still breathing. Beneath the blanket of another French death, this afternoon is one I will be keeping. Where skin is painted by a brush from the sun, pull the sheets up to your...
True. Literally a frightened rabbit.
We need to check on like some kind. There must be a website, you know, like does the dog die? There must be a website that says
how long was the rabbit in that
was
box?
The rabbit okay.com.
I mean, luckily the dog website will go through the other animals in the movie as well too, so we can check after this. Yeah, don't want to do it on air though. I might get upset.
Well, my pick, I have gone for something that probably encompasses all the fury and the skill of the karate on display, whilst also being called karate, and it's the song Karate by Tenacious D.
Kyle betrayed me and then he lied, tried to hide, and I died deep inside, and you know the reason why. I'm gonna kick your ass from here to right over there. Oh yeah, motherfucker, I'm gonna kick your fucking dairy here. Yeah, yeah. You broke the rules, now I'll pull out all your pubic hair. You motherfucker. You motherfucker.
Awesome. That's good.
There we go. So, you know, you thought we weren't going to be able to do it listening at home, that we couldn't connect songs to No Retreat, No Surrender. Well, we did. So they stick that in your pipe and smoke it. But if you think that you could do better than that, then you know what you could do? You could get in our Discord, because we do discuss our song choices in our Discord. And if you look down in the show notes, you'll see a link to join our Discord. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? We'd all like that. And you know what? We'd all say hello. Even Marty, she is nice in real life. So she will say hello to you as well. So click on the Discord and we'll all have a chat in there. But if you want to vote on which of us three has the best song choice, well, and who, why wouldn't you? You can go over to our Instagram, which is the_movie mixtape. And on the weekend, after this comes out, we will put up a little voting poll to see which one is your favorite. And also on there, you'll be able to see all of Mikey P's amazing artwork. Mikey P, we've not seen No Retreat, No Surrender, but your Hitchhiker's Guide art, Marcy, describe it to us.
It was perfect because it just had Marvin in it, and that's all you need is Marvin and this beautiful sky behind him and just, you know, being the best. So thank you, Mikey.
You never know what medium Mikey's going to produce the art in from one show to the next. It, 1 week it'll be some beautiful digital, fantastic podcast art. The next it's just some watercolors he's done, yeah? Or some oil painting. Next it's going to be a mosaic. I can feel it. I can feel it in my bones.
So well, get over it's going to gonna be, it's gonna be colored in blood. This. It's going to punch
No. Rabbit's blood.
That's what I was going to say, and then I was like, no.
So, yeah, get over to our Instagram, the_movie mixtape. Yeah, that's it. If you want to email us, though, instead, or send a voicemail, you can. You definitely can. Our email address is themoviemixtapepod@gmail.com. themoviemixtapepod@gmail.com. Mikey, will you open up the pod canon and see if we've got anything in there this episode.
Oh, do we ever have something this week? You guys ready?
Oh, wait. My God.
No. I'm done playing Street Fighter with you. You use Bison every time. I'm sick of it. Plus, the A button sticks on this controller. It's the only reason you're beating me. I'm done. Where's my Echo the Dolphin cartridge? Oh, shoot. Hold on. They answered. Quiet. Turn that down. Marcy, Dirk, Mikey, listen. It's Brandon. We got a problem.
Those
damn preps got us again.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember Screech as the Tiger mascot this year, right? Well, they kidnapped him. And no, this isn't season 1, episode 16, Save That Tiger from Saved by the Bell. This is really happening. Anyway, they said the only way we can get Screech back is to beat the preps in a race. I need you all to get your blades,
yes,
your helmets, you know, optionally because it's the 90s, and you probably want those little wrist brace things too. It gets rough out there. Meet me in Cincinnati at the top of Devil's Backbone because we're watching and talking about the 1993 mm-hmm. teen comedy rollerblading classic, Airborne.
Yeah.
It's available to everyone for free. Here's what I need you to do. Go to your home office, boot up your compact Presario, open up Netscape Navigator, and type in archive.org.
Mm.
You guys can probably figure it out from there. All right, I'll catch you all later on the hill. Oh, and bring Snake if you see him. We might need that guy.
God. Oh, my God.
Everybody putting us to shame with their voice.
Brandon, kiss me on the mouth right now.
Wow.
So that is our friend Brandon, who is actually going to join us next episode for our final movie in the Rediscovered Mix. And he is chosen. What did he choose, Mike?
What a pick. Airborne.
I'm going to tell you right now, I've never even heard of it.
Can I just have like a little me moment? Whenever Brandon was nice enough to send us like little clues and hints, and there was like a rollerblading gif. Was that what he sent? I thought he was picking Brink, and I was very excited.
Don't even know what Brink is.
That was a Disney Channel original movie about rollerblading.
Honestly, Marcy, not that far off, probably.
I am very excited to watch Airborne.
Great pick, Brandon. Great pick.
I'm very excited too. Maybe I'll wear my rollerblades when we're recording.
But
we
are more excited that next time we're going to have Brandon actually on the show with us. He's an amazing, amazing person. He was on an episode of Austin Danger podcast when they covered Terminator 2. And he's just a really smart, funny guy that I think we've been wanting to have on our show for a long time. And finally, it is about to happen. Mm. Brandon, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Brandon. I'm so excited.
Cannot wait. Thank you for putting in all the effort for that voicemail. If you want to send in a voicemail to our show, you don't need to be as skilled as Brandon is. You can just send us a normal voice memo or join us in the Discord or write us an email or connect to us on Instagram. We're a friendly bunch. And if you do like the show, you can always give us a rating or tell a mate about it. That'll be really good as well. But other than that, we will see you next time when we cover Airborne. Bye.
Bye.
For now.
Suck on that, you suckers.
Movie Mixtape is a podcast hosted by Dirk, Mikey P, and me, Marcy. Episodes edited by Dirk and Marcy. Show art by Mikey P. Our logo comes from Iron Tooth Design. Follow us on Instagram at @the_moviemixtape or email us at themoviemixtapepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Bye.
This is a Tape Deck podcast.
Christopher Lloyd, Tim Curry.
It was Christopher Wood.
I said Christopher Lloyd.
Christopher Wood. Over the Garden Wall. Over the Garden Wall.
Is that Gregory? Is that who he plays?
Is it Over the Garden Wall?
Yeah, Over the Garden Wall. The cartoon?
Mm-hmm. I'm checking the fucking thing you're talking about.